Using meditation to unlock my inner wisdom. This is a seminar, and this is lecture 4. Meditation sets a cause in motion for my ideal health and the ideal health of everyone in the world. So, now, my meditation sets the cause in motion for my ideal health. We've been talking about that very seriously, that meditation is what sets our cause in motion for what we want to do in life. Now, what do you want to do in life? What do you want to accomplish for yourself? Do you want to accomplish a healthy body, an ideal body, an ideal mind? If you do, then you have to put the cause in motion. You have to put the cause in motion for that. And you cannot do it without the cause in motion. And you cannot do it with contrary causes in motion. And we all have a tendency to put contrary causes in motion. And why we put these contrary causes in motion is a very good question. Why would anyone say that they were not well? Why would anyone say that they were not healthy, they were not happy, and they were not wealthy? Why would anyone say that? This is the appearance, the illusion. And so you say it. Now, you say to a young man, go out and get yourself a job and get yourself a good income and take care of yourself. So he goes out and gets a job, gets a good income, takes care of himself and does a good job, and he's happy and he's healthy. Then something comes along and he loses his job. So when he loses his job, he loses his self-respect. And when he loses his self-respect, he loses his feeling of self-confidence for his health and his relationships and everything else in life. It's a very strange thing, but a very active thing that we do. Now, why do we do that? Well, we do that because we feel unworthy. And we do. Everyone feels unworthy. And you say, well, some people don't. Some people are very much worthy. They have a lot of good health and good prosperity and everything, and they feel very good. How come they got it? And you say they don't feel healthy and wealthy. Well, why would they have it? What would be a reason that they might have it? Why might some people have health and wealth and have a bad attitude about themselves?
Because they still feel unworthy.
The answer is they don't. We think they do, but they don't. We think they have a good attitude about themselves,
yes.
And they don't.
Yes.
Yeah. We are not aware of all the details about another person's life. We're only aware of the details of our own life. Now, do you ever think about yourself that wasn't a nice thing that I did? Did you ever think about yourself that you said, my gosh, how could anybody like me when I act like that? And you do think that. And you say, how could I ever be healthy if I'm going to go around with unhealthy people? And then you say, well, no. The doctor goes around with unhealthy people, and he's healthy.
Yes.
He's got to be healthy. Mm-hmm. That's his business. How come he can go around with unhealthy people and be healthy? Well, because he doesn't take on the problem of the people.
Yes.
He is a professional. And he goes in there and he says, okay, what's your problem? Here's the solution. Go. And that's it. He doesn't stake around and say, oh, my buddy, I'm so worried about you. I'm so uptight about you. I'm so concerned that, you know, will you be all right? Will this be okay? And he doesn't do that. Who does the doctor associate with? Healthy people. He associates with, his patients are unhealthy, but he doesn't associate with his patients. His patients are not his clients. They're not his friends. Oh, occasional one might be, you know. But most of the time, they're not. Most of the time, people do not have their doctor be their friend and doctor both. Either he's a friend or he's a doctor, but not both. Because they don't want their friend knowing all about their personal life. Their doctor can know about their personal life because he keeps it on a professional basis. But the minute you get a friend in there, he starts thinking that he must be worried about you and must take care of you. Well, if you allow that to happen to yourself, then you're in trouble. Now, why is it many practitioners have problems? And a practitioner is a person who looks at another person and sees what?
Whole and perfect.
He looks past the illusions and sees them whole and perfect. He looks past the appearances and sees them whole and perfect. The practitioner does not have anything to do with the illness or the need of a person. The practitioner only looks at the truth. Now, if a practitioner ever begins to look at the problem and worry about the problem, the practitioner is no good. Absolutely no good. It's not that they're not nice people. It's not that they're not sincere, but they're stupid. They're not doing their job. A doctor cannot afford to get sick. He cannot afford to get involved in his patient's activities. If he did, he's out of business. And just like a practitioner cannot afford to get involved in the patient's problems. So the practitioner goes straight to the jugular vein and says, okay, here's what we're going to do. I look right past you and I see you whole and perfect. Now, I want you to see yourself whole and perfect, too, right now. But, doctor, I like being sick. Doctor, I like having my friends bring me flowers. Doctor, practitioner, you know. And, okay, I'll call someone else who likes to deal the way you do and let them work with you. But I don't work that way. I don't work that way. You go to the queen and you say, hey, queen, I got this problem, and can you give me a hand with this problem? And the queen says, what's your problem? And so you tell her, and she says, well, that's an area I can work with. Sure. What would you like? Well, I'd just like some advice and some help. Okay, fine. Here, I'll send you this office, and they take care of you. Now, she's done. She's done. She's done her work, she's passed it on, and she's put it off to her associates, you know. And she never even asks how they are later on, because they were not her friend. They merely came in and asked for help, and she gave the help. Now, if she checks on them to see if everything came out all right, then she's not doing her job right. What should she expect? When she asks her associates to work for this person, what should she expect?
For them to do it properly.
But they do the job properly.
It's their job.
Huh?
It's not her job. She's passed it to...
She just gives it to them, and the only responsibility, she makes sure they do their job properly. She doesn't want to know any details. No details. She doesn't want to become involved. Well, now, one of the biggest things that you and I have to work with in our life is that we are associated with ourselves. We know ourselves very well. We know our hang-ups. We know our problems. We know all the things that we've done that were good, bad, and indifferent. And because of that, we cannot effectively treat ourselves. Unless we do a cleanup job first. Before the doctor can help the patient, he's usually washed the patient down, you know. Wash away all the blood and all the dirt and all the junk, you know. Oh, there's the body. Okay. How do we wash ourselves down as a practitioner? I
am whole and
like
perfect.
Me.
I like me.
See, that's the wash down.
I like me as I am now.
Yes. Well, we don't say that, as I am now. Shit on that.
Yeah.
We don't say that.
Yeah.
Because if you say as I am now, then and you're full of disease, so that's what you want to be? I like me, period. I like the real me, the ideal me, the me that isn't perhaps evident right now. But you see, that's where we get in trouble. I like me. And don't ad-lib. Many of us want to ad-lib all the time. We want to add a bunch of things. Ingeborg, if I give a statement, I like me, I like me, I like me. And she will come up with a statement, I think I am fine. She's got to be different. She's got to say it in her own words. I say, Ingeborg, don't say it in your own words. I don't want you to understand this. I don't want you to understand the words you're saying. Because if you understand the words you're saying, you'll interpret them in your own way. And that's bad. That's bad. So now, if I say, you are supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, you'll say, I guess so, sure. I think it means good. But you see, if I let you interpret it, then you're in trouble. Mm-hmm. Oh, a little bit of sugar makes the
medicine go down.
Yeah. Well, what if I had something different? What if I said, a little bit of sugar makes the world go around, the world go around. You see, and you know you're going to say the medicine goes down there. Mm-hmm. See, those are sprick words that we're used to having and we're used to saying. And we want to, in our meditation, move away from these things that we understand.
From the routine.
Because if we understand it, we're just going to understand it. I say things to Sylvia and the rest of the group there. I say, okay, now, I want you to hold out your hand and keep it out there. So they hold it out there and keep it out there. And then they said, well, when can we set it down? I said, don't ask. I'll tell you. Next week, maybe. But just hold it out there. Hold it out there. Hold it out there. I will not. I will not. You know? They want to put it down. I say, then you don't get the treatment.
Yes.
The treatment is getting over that attitude that you've got to have your own way.
Yes.
And that you cannot follow instructions from somebody else. Don't come to me if you don't want instructions, you know. You may put your arms down. But don't come to me if you don't want instructions. Don't come to you as their gynecologist if they don't want your instructions of how to have a baby in a nice way, you know? And if they don't follow your instructions, they're liable to have all sorts of difficulties. And if they don't follow your instructions, they might have a real nice, easy birth, too. It all depends. So, but the thing is, they come to you or come to me or come to us for instructions, for guidance, for help to do what they want to do. Now, I say in meditation should be as archaic, as difficult to understand as we can possibly have it. Because if it's understandable, then you right away think you know it all. Now, how do you meditate as a Hindu? Come. How do you meditate as a Hindu?
Yoga.
Yeah. Sit in the yogic position, yeah. See, how do you meditate as a Hindu? Yoga position. Yeah, bump, bump, bump. It's foredrawn. Now, what if you're a yoga without legs and you can't sit in the yoga position? Does that take you away from the yoga program?
No.
It sure does. You haven't got the legs, you know. You can't cross your legs. You're out of business. If you're going to think about it, if I say to you, and you don't have any legs, all right, assume the yoga position. So mentally, you assume the yoga position even without the legs. And you go for it. If you fight, it's no good. You cannot get any help or any benefit from it. You see? Hold up your arm. You know, put your arm down. Do this, do that. I tell them all these different things. And the reason is not because it's intelligent, not because it's something important, but it's so that they will learn to let go.
Yes.
Not be possessive and say, I will not. I do what I want to do. And every time they say that, then they are 100 miles away from perfect treatment. Interesting, isn't it? Can you understand that?
Yes.
Now, why is Ibube sort of not very cooperative some days? Because he has been thrown about here and there all night long. He's taken this here, taken here. His mother says, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, we're going to do this. And he had planned on staying here, or he'd planned on doing something else, you know. And so he isn't asked if he wants to do it. He just told, you got to do it. Well, he begins to rebel. And in his rebellion, it makes him very tired. And when he's very tired, then he does this game, you know. And that's okay. But if we understand, then what happens? then we say, maybe I should have done it different. But if you are a master, you will say to the Ibube or anybody else, Ibube, come. And Ibube comes. Ibube, sit here. Ibube sits. No. If his mother were to say, Ibube, I'm so glad I'm home with you. Come. And he would just rush to her arms. Come sit here. Ibube, I feel like taking a swim tonight. Shall we go down and have our swim lesson? Shall we go down and have our swim? Oh, boy, yes. But Ibube, you got to go down and take it. You got to do this. You're in this level. You're that. You know, and it's totally something that he's going to logically think is not good. But once you put emotions in there, once you put attitudes in there of a loving parent, you know, like Shilma can do, Ibube will just drop over backwards to do what he wants, what she wants, you know. And so if we try to be logical, try to be reasonable, we end up in so much trouble. And rather than doing that, what we want to do is just be lovable. And starting out with what?
I like me.
And sing it 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 and sing it. Because when they put you in a prison camp, they put you in a certain building first. And what is that building called? It's a de-lousing building. It cleans you up of all the lice and all of the body problems that you might have, because people have been living in boxcars and things like that before they came to the camp. And they had all sorts of problems. And so they scrubbed you down and cleaned you off of all those lousing things that you had. And we want to have that sounds pretty heavy, but we want to have the de-lousing situation. And so if we're going to de-louse ourselves, because if we have those lice on us, they can carry diseases around and cause all sorts of problems. And the prison guards don't want that sort of thing. They want as easy a road as possible. So you de-louse the prisoners. So we de-louse our consciousness of anything that might be harmful to us by saying, I like me. Now, you say, well, man, that's a pretty heavy way of talking about it. That's right. It should be a heavy way. You should really, when you think I like me, then you say, de-lousing. You know? But really, that makes you think. Then you start realizing the things that you're doing in your meditation are truly important. The things that you're doing in your meditation really are leading up to something valuable for you. And this is what you want. You want what is to come from the meditation. And now, Christy, what happens when you enter meditation in its ultimate way? What happens to you?
A state of bliss.
A sense of peace.
Peace and bliss. A state of bliss as well.
My, you do pretty well. Okay, a sense of peace and bliss. Now, that is what you expect to happen. Now, can you have a sense of peace and bliss while you're scratching all your lice and while you've got all these things bothering you? Not very well, you know. Or somebody else. And you don't want to sit next to that person. They're really full of them. Now, so first you want to cleanse your consciousness. You want to de-louse yourself. And how do you de-louse yourself? Okay.
Removing all the negative attitudes.
What's that, please?
Negative attitudes.
You say, I like me.
Yeah.
I mean, this is what my story is here.
Yes,
and I want like you to say what I'm telling you in the story to see if you got the story.
Yeah.
I don't want you to be like Ingeborg and make up your own phrase.
No.
Yeah. That's what you're doing. You really weren't listening to me. And so when you're just sort of grabbing at straws to sort of say something here. But that's okay. I understand. I can be boring at times, I'm sure. But think of it. You're loused, and you're scratching, and you're irritated, and you're thinking of other things. And what happens? You're not getting any benefit from your meditation. So you say, I like me, And when you say, I like me, it's a cleansing activity to your whole body and mind. And cleans out all those lice, all those things that are bothering you and that would take your attention away. Now, this morning I tried an experiment while I was doing the meditation with you guys. And I was thinking, okay, I'm God, God I am, I'm God, God I am. No big deal there. You all can handle that pretty well. But I was looking in each one of your minds, and I was seeing how many of you were thinking about I am God, God I am alone, or how many of you were bull gathering off on other possible ideas. And all of you had more ideas away from I am God, God I am than for God, God I am. You had more ideas of how your car runs, or how your apartment needs cleaning up, or how you like to get off to America, or how you like to do this, or how Ibu Bay is being a bothersome guy at the moment, and you, Ibu Bay, you know, and you know while they're meditating. And so what's going on? You're not concentrating on your meditation. You're not concentrating on I am God, God I am. And it's so simple because you just say it, but it's so hard. Why I can say I am God? That's really tough. But it's easy because you're giving it all your attention. Because you don't have the ability to just waddle it off and think of other things. You have to give it your full attention. So you do your better work in how I can say I'm God. And that's good. Now, I give you these possibilities and I know what you're doing. And I'm watching what you're doing, and I realize when you come to the pitch of boredom and you come to the pitch of total irritation with what's going on, and you say, I don't see where we're going. Don't look. Don't look. If you look and see where we're going, you'll miss where we're going. You will. You'll miss where we're going for one reason, because you have already expected that you're going to go someplace else. And when you don't go where you expected to go, then you're unhappy. The people who spend time in India training with the chelas, or the gurus there, they don't know where they're going. They don't know what the program is. They only know step by step, moment by moment, of what they're told to do, and they do it. And then they arrive at that state of just release. I mean, they have turned themselves over totally to it, and totally to it, and nothing can happen to them, nothing can hurt them, nothing can be good or bad to them, it's just the flow. And when they're in the flow, wonderful things happen to them. Then they begin to open their eyes and see what's going on. Yeah. If we don't open our eyes and see what's going on, then nothing happens. But we cannot open our eyes and see what's going on until we commit ourselves to the program. Now, I have said this too many times. If you want to go to the University of Healing, we don't teach music. We don't teach you how to play a guitar. We don't teach you how to do anything. You may learn it by yourself, but we don't teach it. There we teach you meditation and philosophy. Now, if you're going to go to the University of Healing and you're going to spend 80% of your time practicing on your guitar, you will not be a good student of the university because you will not be paying attention to the coursework. Now, when O.K. took his courses in gynecology, he stayed with those courses and did those courses and went right through those courses, you know, like butter. No problem at all. But if he had had several other interests, he might have done it. Today there are geniuses that can do five or six things at one time and keep them in track. And you know, if you really stop to think about it, our children are those geniuses. Our children are learning the language, they're learning mathematics, they're learning what else is sociology and whatever other subjects they're taught in school. And then they're learning sports. And then they're learning to be social with their other friends in school. And then they're learning to be respectful to their teacher. And then they were learning to be more respectful to the principal. And they're learning to be respectful to their parents. And then they're learning to be respectful to the church. And then they're learning to be respectful to the state. I mean, my God, those kids are really getting their hands full. And they're using it very well. But they're getting it drop by drop in each area. And they're picking it up, and they're beautiful. And they are fantastic. Now, if we would teach them to meditate, if we would teach them to go within and say within what? I like me. Just a minute. If you would teach the kids in elementary school to all say, I like me, oh, they like me. Plenty of you think, no. Many of them are doing what they have to do because they have to do it. They're not doing it because it's exciting. But the minute you teach them to say, I like me, whatever they do becomes exciting. They don't know that, but it does. You don't know that, but it does. Are you ready to take that opportunity to work with yourself and others by saying, I like me? If you are, you get results. But the minute you get in there, what's that got to do with the price of beans in Russia, you know? What's that got to do with the learning here? What's that got to do with meditation? You know, what's that got to do with anything? You know, you look at the lives of our great scientists, and somewhere they learned to meditate. Somewhere they learned to listen within. Somewhere they learned, and then they followed it. And that's what made them great. That's what really made them beautiful. But they did not become beautiful by objecting to following the program. Okay, enough of that. If you want to gain benefit from meditation, then you meditate. Now, how do you meditate? What does meditate mean?
Think about.
To think about. Meditation means to think about. How do you think about anything?
See it done. See it done.
See it done? Yeah, but how do you meditate on a beautiful cloud in the sky?
Affirmation. Through affirmation.
Slow down a little bit.
By
your choice. You look up there and you meditate on the cloud. You're not affirmationing it or anything else like that. You're just looking at that lovely cloud and saying, golly, that's a lovely cloud. That's beautiful. And then the big sky around it and so forth. And you're not meditating on anything in particular. What you're doing is just meditating. You're just thinking about the cloud. You're just thinking about how it is up there and how beautiful it is, or how, why is it up there, maybe, you know. And then as you do this, then you go on to other things. You think about the world. You think, and that's a big one too, you know. And then you think about the church and the state. And then you think about your own parents. And then you think about yourself as a parent. And your children, and life that you have had, whatever it may be. And then you think about these things, and what are you thinking about it? No judgment. It's just observing your life, observing the cloud, observing these things. And when you think about those things with observation only, without judgment, then awarenesses come up inside of you that are absolutely fantastic. Alertnesses come up in you to make sure that you are in tune with things. And how do awarenesses come up in you to make sure that you're in tune with it? What might be one of the ways when you're looking at a cloud? What might happen? Yeah? What might happen? Yeah? Yeah?
Well, you observe things you haven't thought of before.
But you don't think of anything particular.
Yeah.
You're looking at that cloud.
Yeah.
And what do you see when you're looking at a cloud oftentimes?
Yeah, the beauty and the movement around it.
Like what? Yeah. Like people.
Yeah.
Like mountains.
Yeah.
Like trees, or like animals walking by. Yeah. You see, you're looking at those clouds and they form into all those crazy things. And it's not true. It's not true. It's an illusion. But you see, look, did you see that? Look at that lady sitting on top of that mountain. And did you see that the mountain is falling down all around her? And she's still up there. And you see, they're just illusions. And they're beautiful illusions, but they keep your mind into something that is outrageous. And is it there? Sure it is. Is it not there? True. Second later, it's gone. But for the moment, it was there. And you have that moment yet in your mind, you know. You are thinking about it yet in your mind, even though the cloud's long gone, you know, because it made a beautiful picture in your mind. And so then you're thinking about that. Now, what are you thinking? What are you thinking about that cloud? You're thinking, yeah, it's beautiful. And then the thought comes up to you about, picking cotton, maybe, you know. And so you're thinking of picking cotton in the field. And so then you say, oh my gosh, this cotton is just like the clouds. And you're thinking of the relativity of these things. And pretty soon your mind is bringing together all the world in a relative pattern, in a happy pattern. But think about something, not important things, just to think about. You see, if you think about your children, you're not thinking they should do or shouldn't do something. You're just thinking about them. All of you, except you, and maybe you have some too in him, but all of you have children. And what are your children doing? Or thumbs up. Thumbs up. There. How are they doing? How are your kids doing?
Doing all right.
No. Super. Yeah. Not all right. Yeah. They're doing super.
Yeah.
You see, you got the opportunity to throw a kicker in there for your children. And you see, I'm thinking of hiring your kids, and you don't know that. And you say, oh, they're all right. Yeah, they're okay. They're dependable sometimes. And I think to myself, oh, I'm glad I talked to him first.
Yes.
You know? Now, but if you were just outrageous as a parent, and you're allowed to do that as a parent.
Yes.
You're allowed to be dishonest as a parent. You're allowed to say, my children are the greatest kids on earth, you know. My children are honest. My children do everything. They start something, they finish it, and they, you know, whatever a boss wants to hear, you're saying it. Now, why would you do that? Because you love your children. You don't want anybody in this world to think anything about your children except loving things about your children. And if it doesn't start with you, where does it start? You know. So whenever anyone says anything about your children, the first thing you say is, oh, fantastic. Oh, glorious. Oh, wonderful. You may have to have your tongue in your cheek while you're saying it at first. But the thing is, you say, oh, wonderful. Oh, fantastic. And then what happens? You're putting a cause in motion in a meditative way more powerful than you could do with ever, you know, bated hands. More powerful than ever going into the church. More powerful than any professional way you could do it. Because you're putting your whole self in there. You're putting your energy in there, your enthusiasm, your joy. And that power of that meditation is just unbelievable. You know that. You know that too. You see, you were smart. Let your daughter come and be with your sister, you know. And what happened? What happened?
She said, growing up.
She loves her, and she saw her being successful.
Yes.
So you could forget her not cleaning her room and her not doing the things she's supposed to do. You could, it's none of your business anymore. She's not at home. She's over with Christy, you know. And so you just say, my daughter, she's perfect. My daughter always does everything perfect. My daughter is the ideal girl. You see? You see what I mean? So, you see, your meditative ability and power multiplies tremendously when you don't have that first-hand account. And you can just let her worry about it. And Christy doesn't. Seville?
Yes.
If you sent your daughter to Christy to learn to be, to keep her house clean, you sent her to the wrong place. Christy can live in a house that is so active that every piece of paper, wherever it may be, has a purpose and is doing something. And it's not that she's messy. It's just that everything is in action. But you see, what happened to your daughter when she came to be with Christy? and go to school here. What happened to her? What happened to her?
She was fantastic.
She remembered every single thing you told her about being orderly and so forth, and she did them beautifully. And Christy says, "My gosh, how can you keep everything so nice and so beautiful in here?" You know, and me, I just things just don't get together. And your daughter says what? Your daughter says, "My mother taught me." That's what she says, and you didn't know she said that, but you released her, like he released his sons and daughter. And they all turn out beautiful. Each one still is doing things in a creative way, but they all turn out beautiful. Yeah. And you've had many people, kids and adults, come through your life. And you train them in the way that you train them. And well, what's the way you trained them?
Be themselves and have fun.
You train them not be themselves and have fun. That's the last thing you knew how to do. You train them to do whatever you were asked. If you're asked to do something, run and jump and do it. If you're asked to do something, run and jump and do it. If your supervisor says do something, run and jump and do it. If anybody in the hospital says do it, run and jump. And they learn from you not to run and jump. Because they saw that it didn't really get you anywhere. All that it got you was just running and jumping. But maybe that's why you're so healthy. What do you think? Right. Yeah. Now, Chrissy, is it bad that you are a relaxed housekeeper? No. Is it good that you're a relaxed housekeeper? No. It just is. Now, what kind of a housekeeper is okay here? Is he the kind of housekeeper that he was all the years of his married life? Or is he, after his wife left and he was alone to go by himself, did he then start being very casual? Or is he just as orderly as he always was?
Just like that.
I'm sorry?
He's always as he is.
He's always what?
Orderly.
Orderly.
He is always orderly. And he is always orderly. Why?
It has been part of him.
It's his training. It's his training. And is it difficult for him to be orderly?
No.
Does it mean he's got to take a whole day and clean up the house?
No.
He never has to take a whole day and clean up the house because there's nothing to clean. Because everything is taken care of as it goes along. When he takes out the bread, he puts the bread back. When he takes out something, he puts it back. When he takes the dish out, he rinses it off. When he's done, puts it back in the cupboard, and he's done his dishes. Right?
Right.
So you see, this is just something that he has trained himself in. Now, his mother didn't train him to do that. His mother trained him to be part of the family. His wife didn't train him to do that. She trained him to be part of the family. And said, I'll do it for it. I'll take care of everything, perhaps. You know. And so now, what are we talking about here? We're talking about things that we intuitively are doing, not recognizing that we intuitively are doing them. And these are things that guide our meditations. These are things that guide us as we are attempting to go the pathway that is to our highest and best. And we're falling very short of that pathway. And why are we falling short?
We're not paying attention.
We have too many masters. We're not paying any attention. We have too many masters. We have too many people telling us what to do. And the day that each one of us says, I'm me, I like me, just the way I am, and just the way I am, I like me just the way I am, and I'm happy, and that's good. That's not, we're not cleaning, delousing ourselves at the moment, but I like me just the way I am. And I'm a happy person. And you see, when you like yourself just the way you are, and you're a happy person, do you see a dirty house?
No.
Do you see clothes that need to be ironed?
No.
Do you see problems? No. And people come over and want to borrow things from you, and you say, no. My stuff works for me, I don't loan it out to anybody because if I want it, it works. If I loan it to somebody, it comes back, it doesn't work for some reason or other. You know, there's a different attitude on it. Now, do you feel bad about saying no to people who want to borrow your things? No. Because intuitively, you know that you don't want to be bothered with repairing things after it's brought back. And it's not a matter of repairing a hole. You know what a hole is? A hole is, you know, working in the dirt. You can't do too much to a hole. But it's the attitude that's put on that hole by the people who used it. People who break their tools are people who don't want to do the work. We have so many people around the campus. We have the best tools and the best equipment you could want there. And they don't like to use it. And so they break it. We have sit-on mowers. We have sit-on tractors. We have tractors that pull mowers. We have everything under the sun. And Brian doesn't like it. And so when he's using it, it doesn't work. Somebody else comes along and uses it, works just fine. Now, why? Because he doesn't like it. Now, we are that way. We say that meditation doesn't work. And we say meditation doesn't work because it doesn't work for us the way we were taught to do it. We were taught to do it by some church that we were in or some minister that we had or some teacher or some parents that we had, and they taught us meditation. And it was not a good meditation. It was not beneficial. And we fought it. And because we fought it, we never got any benefit out of it. Now, how are we going to get benefit out of meditation? Well, first, throw out the word. Throw out the word, not throw it out to the people, but dump it. And take another word for meditation. What's another word for meditation? Pray. And I don't mean take pray, but I mean, what's another word for meditation? What's another word for pray? When you fall in love with something, are you meditating? Mm-hmm. When you fall in love with working in the garden, you're working in the garden, and you're weeding the garden, and you're putting the plants in, and you're just having such a good time. You love it. Does your garden grow well?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Are you meditating?
Yes.
Well, do you think you're meditating? No. You're just working in the garden.
Yes.
And are you thinking good thoughts? Oh, yes.
Yes.
Are you thinking good thoughts so that every seed you plant is going to grow beautifully?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You see, we have to be smarter than our dumbest thoughts. And our dumbest thoughts want to tell us that we can't do things and we don't know how to do things and we haven't the ability to. And that we don't deserve it. And that's the biggest bad aspect of meditation that we could ever have. We don't deserve it. And you know, Sybil here doesn't deserve to have the house she lives in. What did she do to have that house? Well, she and her husband built it and then got it. It's hers. Well, why does she have it? What makes it her right to have it? Well, she owns it. I guess that's a good right, huh? She owns it. It's hers. Well, what makes it her right? How come she got that and I didn't, you know, or something like that? Well, I have no idea about that. All I know is that she says, it's my house and I like it and I'm perfectly happy here. And, well, then why don't you stay there instead of traveling all over the world? Well, it's my home base. It's where I come home to. And it's always there for me. And it's always wonderful. And then she says, and you know, it's none of your goddamn business. Get your nose out of my life. It's none of your business to ask me questions about what I'm doing in my house and why I'm doing it. I don't say that about your house. I don't ask you. I don't ask you at all. Now, I come here, and the girls have prime me. They said, Herb, be sure you find out how O.K.'s daughter is and how their sons are and find out how his house is and find out how his world is and find out how Sybil is doing and find out how Faith is because you haven't seen Faith for a long time and found out how she's doing, and found out how Seville's sisters are all doing, you know, Mabel and all the rest of them, how are they doing, and how's life? And I don't give a damn. I really don't care. Now, your daughter called, and she talked to me. I love her. She didn't talk to me. I still love her. But I don't have to ask questions. I used to be a newspaper reporter. And as a newspaper reporter, I had to ask everybody questions all the time. A lot of questions. And people were used to us asking personal questions that nobody else dared ask, you know. But we asked the questions. Now, do I need to know that answer? Did my readers of the newspapers need to know the answers? No. But you needed to tell me. That's why I needed to know. And when I channeled you into different directions, then you went in different directions. And when I deloused you, how did I delouse you? What did I do?
Ask questions.
Loud.
Ask questions.
No. How did I delouse you?
I like me. I like me.
No.
No, I deloused when asking you questions, when interviewing you.
I deloused them by my saying, I like you. Not you saying you like you. That's good too. But I say, I like you. And so right away, they say, that the guy's got good judgment, you know. That guy's got good taste. He likes me. You understand? Yeah. So every door was open for me, so I didn't really have to ask anymore. Yeah. And they told me their whole life story. And I had to select and leave out all the good stuff. Because that would have made it interesting reading, but it wasn't necessary. It was belittling to them. You had a cold yesterday. I had a cold yesterday, and today I'm holding a period. I had a cold yesterday. And so I write, Sibyl had a cold yesterday, and today she's holding a period. But yesterday she had a cold. She had a cold yesterday. You know, she was under the weather. She was down. She was not herself. She was not on top of herself. She had a cold. What business is that of the world? What's the world business about you? That you're whole and perfect. The world's business about you is that you're a wonderful being and that you're beautiful and that everything you do is fantastic, right? Yes. Right?
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And that's what it's all about. So, I delouse you. I say I like you. And when I say I like you, then everything is go. But if I say, what did you do? When did you do it? How did you do it? You know, threatening you. You soon get rid of me. And maybe that's a good thing to do with bad thoughts. Soon get rid of them. But how can you live your life in a constant state of meditation, in a constant state of being aware of those lovely clouds and the pictures that they paint, being aware of what's going on in the world, being aware of this 3D printer printing up a piece of equipment and printing up those things that go around, you know, the little ratchets that go around. You didn't see it, huh? Did you see it? Okay. Well, how did it do that? Well, it isn't a matter of how did it do it. It did it. And that guy developed the idea. He developed the technique for it to do that. And that's wonderful. And then what does that say? Is that an impossibility? Oh, yes. It's a very great impossibility. But they're doing it. It's impossible, but they're doing it. Now, what happens in your life that's impossible and you're doing it? What meditation have you wanted to work on to benefit yourself? Get rid of cancer, get rid of heart problems, get rid of a body ache, get rid of a neighbor who's bothersome or whatever. And how do you do it? You meditate on it. How do you meditate on it? Do you think of it as a problem that continuously is there and it's impossible to get rid of?
No.
If you think of it that way, what's going to happen? It's yours. You empower it to stay and be yours. But the minute you start saying, it's fantastic. The minute you start taking a hold of life's circumstances and be the master of them, then you are. In the school of the master, I had people doing all sorts of crazy things they would have never in a million years done. But they did it, and it changed their whole life. And they didn't even know it changed their life. To this day, they don't know that it changed their life, but it changed their life. And they are stronger, more powerful, more beautiful, more fantastic people. But why? Because they did it, and they experienced it. And you can do it, and you can experience it. Now, do you want to? Yes. Do you want to be master of your meditation?
Yes.
How are you going to be master of your meditation?
By doing the meditation.
By what?
Carrying out the meditation.
Carrying on with the meditation. Okay, now, what meditation are you going to carry on with? And one illustration.
To realize that I like me. I start there.
Okay, your meditation is the meditation of liking yourself.
Yes.
I like me, I like me, I like me.
And then like other people too.
You know, take one part at a time.
Yeah.
You know, start out with you like yourself, that's great. The other people too, that's all to the good. But first, if you don't like yourself, you're not going to like other people.
Yes.
You're not going to like anything else in the world. But like yourself. Now, how do you like yourself? How do you train yourself to like yourself?
By speaking words. Saying it.
Saying,
I like me.
Like me.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you for not playing the Ingeborg. Okay. Yeah, take the terms that we're talking about here, we're learning. Okay, now. So you say, I like me. And what happens when you say, I like me? What happens to you when you say you like you?
I have a nice feeling around
you. You have a very good feeling around you. Your chest goes out, your chin goes up, your shoulders go back, and your tummy goes in, and you say, I feel fantastic.
Yes.
And you don't say a word. To yourself you say that maybe, but outward. And people come up to you and they say, God, okay, you're fantastic, you're wonderful. What have you been drinking? You know, give me some of that. And you say, well, it's very expensive. Well, no, I like it. Well, when you're ready, you come to me. It's going to cost you $1,000 a bottle. You come to me, and I'll help you get it. And so those who really want it come to you with $1,000, you know. And you say, put your $1,000 here. Okay, now, here's the bottle, and it's fresh, pure spring water. Okay, now, drink this and say, I like me, I like me, I like me, 10 times for each gulp, for each gulp. And if you want to drink the whole bottle at once, that's okay, but I like me, I like 10 times for each gulp. Okay, now, do you like yourself? Oh, boy, I feel great. You have to, because you've been building that in your consciousness. Okay, now do you think you're worth $1,000? Oh, I'm worth more than $1,000. Okay, well, let me give you $1,000 to start with. I give them back the $1,000 because I don't charge for these things, you know. I just see if they're willing to pay. And if they're willing to pay, money seems to be what you're willing to pay with. If they're willing to pay, then they'll get results. But if they're not willing to pay, they won't get results. It's just that simple. It's a tough thing because money and people are difficult to part. They don't like to separate for what they want. They want books from us and they don't want to send money to pay for the books. We say, okay, no books. Oh, you're a church, you should do this. Hey, I'm not a church. I'm a minister. What's your problem? Why do you think I should give you my money? Well, why do you think I should give you my money? And you see, but I don't say that. I don't say that because I don't create people past the I like me stage. People say I like me with me and with themselves, and then they go out and they act upon it, and they are fantastic. Isn't that right?
Yes.
Okay, here. Here's your $1,000 back. Here's your $1,000. Here's your $1,000. No, you're each worth it now.
Thank you.
I like the way you received it. Yeah, very nice. Very nice.
Thank you for giving.
You're welcome. But you see, you cannot get unless you give. And you give not necessarily of money, but you give of your attention, you give of your cooperation, you give of your activity with whatever you're doing, and you get results. But if you don't give, you don't get. And people say, well, you mean I got to give money? If that's what your hang-up is, then yes. Now, if your hang-up is love, that's a problem, isn't it? Yeah. We have some people who come to the ranch, and we have our om before we have our breakfast, and we say om, 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 and then after we're done with that, then we hug and kiss. And some people can't hug and kiss. They can hug, but they can't kiss, especially not on the mouth. And they, you know, like the French, you know, you got to get the cheeks somewhere around there. And I don't invite those people back because they do not enter into the program 100%. I have nothing against them, but I only want people who are 100% in our program to be in our program. If they're not 100% in the program, they're not welcome back. Because what do they do? What do they do? What do they do?
They talk down.
They what?
They go and talk down.
They discriminate what they are supposed to do.
They what?
They select what they are supposed to do.
They slide.
They are not cooperative in the program, yeah. Yeah, that's true. They're not cooperative. It's not the kissing. Because they could pretend. But it's not the kissing. It's that they think that what we're doing is silly. If you think anything that we're doing is silly, then you don't belong in the program.
Yes.
And if you don't want to participate in the program, you won't get the results. Yes. You won't get the results. I have worked with many people, and let's just say five and five. And this five says, yes, 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 yes. I'm whole and perfect. Everything's in divine order. And this says, but look at my problem, but look at this here, look at that here, look at here. And they don't do it. And now how come five here, no, five here, yes. Five here, perfect healings that they gave to themselves. Five here, perfect nothings that they gave to themselves. And even what they had, they took away. Now, why would they do that? And they know that they're doing it because I tell them. I say, if you're going to act like that, you're turning off all your juices instead of turning them on. Yeah. Remember, we told the kid about hugging yourself or being hugged? You know, tension. What happens? Okay, what happens when you squeeze yourself or you're all tense and uptight? What happens?
Yeah, you set up negative emotions. Negative emotions.
I wanted you to say what I said. when I spoke to Michael, I said to Michael, when you get all tense and uptight, you close off your...
Yeah, autonomic.
No, yeah. That's part of it. But yeah. You close off your endocrine system.
Yeah.
You close off all those enzymes that are flowing normally through your body, and you're crushing them virtually, and it takes a while for them to get going again, and some never get going at all. And this is why people have so many problems, because there's tension kills. Doctors are reporting that all the time. Tension kills. And why does it kill? Because you turned off all your juices. You turn off all your enzymes that are going through your body to do their wonderful work. If you listen really carefully to everything I give you, you'll have a complete course in medicine, a course in psychology, a course in philosophy, a course in theology, and you'll have all... But if you listen, but if you don't listen and you take only what you want or take only what you're familiar with, you miss so much. You miss so much, and it just makes me feel sad for you. But it's your choice. But you see, if you feel you know it all. And so many people do. They feel that they know it all. There's nothing you can teach them. Why come to the course, you know? Nothing you can teach them. And so I say to them, Do you know, Seville? You're one of those people. Do you know, Seville? I know lots of people in my world, but I don't know any people as beautiful as you are. I don't know any people that have as lovely an attitude as you do, and on with the gush, you know, on with the good thought. And you say, ooh, Herb is a good guy. Oh, Herb is a smart guy. Oh, Herb is wonderful, you know. And Herb is fantastic, you know. But you don't want to do that. You want to speak those words to yourself and believe them and know them, not hearing them from somebody else, but from you. Because if you hear them from you, then you'll believe them. If you hear them from someone else, in one ear and out the other, it's a lost cause. So be very careful. Be very careful. A lot of people will con you for whatever purpose they want. And you've had a lot of them already. And they're what are called students down there. They say they will do things and they don't do it. Because they have no training, no dedication. They haven't had anyone to delice them. And you need to have a delicing shop there to send people through, to clean them up of all those negative thoughts, all those negative ideas that keep them in limitation. And you too. Because you look at them and you say, oh, my, my, my. And don't you ever do that. You look at your people and you say, you're fantastic. I can see right past all the illusions of your life to the greatness that you are. You're marvelous. You're super. And what will they do? They will do anything for you. All of my students all over the world, with very few exceptions, but a couple exceptions now and then, because they think they know it all, but very few exceptions, think I'm the greatest guy in the world. And of course, they're right. Yes. They're right. But if I need to have them say I'm the greatest guy in the world for me to know I'm right, then I got problems. Mm-hmm. If I have to have them say I'm right or I'm good for to make me feel good, then I could be made feel bad very easily by them saying you're not so good. That's why in all things I want you to make the statement, you know, you stink. Oh, my, I better go and get a bath before I go on my appointment. I want to smell good. I didn't realize that I had body odor or something like that. Well, and they were just pushing your button. And you took it in the right way. You took it in a loving way. And so they said, well, you know, you're okay. You're okay. You know? But always stand up for yourself. Always be yourself. And always know who you are and what you are. And when you do that, then what happens to you?
You ride high.
You arrive high on your own height, on your own inner self. And that's what it's all about. It's wonderful. All right. Mr. Okay. I will let you write the first question for the question and answer period, which will begin shortly. And so if you have any questions about anything, you know, how to make $1 billion or something like that, any questions, just ask it and we'll talk about it.
That's all right.
Okay? Yeah. Okay. So let's say at 5 minutes after, it's now almost the hour, 5 minutes after we'll start with our question and answers. Good. Oh, I'll shut this off.